broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news that networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for June 7th in the year of our Lord, 2016. This, ladies and gentlemen, is our goal, to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. It's incredibly simple. We use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide. We're also convinced the checks and balances inspired by the founders put in place to protect each one of us by their blood, sweat, tears, sacred honor, and fortunes, their very lives, if you will, ladies and gentlemen, is the answer. We can restore the republic. We don't need a revolution, but a restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth certainly is our task. Welcome to the broadcast. Hope you're willing to help. Kirk Crosby's with me. Welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Buenos dias. Greetings and salutations. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Thank you, Sam.
You're very welcome, sir. I rarely do this to our guests, but I'm going to do it anyway. Patrick Simmons, righttowork.org. Welcome to Liberty Roundtable, sir.
Good morning, Sam.
Hey, I rarely do this. We usually talk about the topics that relate to what you're doing, and we'll get into that in just a second. But a quick side note, are you an attorney?
I'm not.
All right. You might be interested in this interesting case. A friend of mine is a guy by the name of James Edwards. He's with a radio talk show called The Political Cesspool. He wrote a book called Racism, Schmacism. And he's a white guy, and he advocates for white history and for the European ancestry and everything like that. He's not a white supremacist. He doesn't like the term white nationalist. But he does believe he has a right to preserve and talk about and celebrate his heritage. He's a great gentleman, a good friend of mine, but the mainstream press tries to claim he's a racist, and so he wrote the book Racism, Schmacism, showing that, you know what, if you're a white person, you're not allowed to advocate for your history, your people, but if you're any other race, you're allowed to, in fact, encouraged to, and he basically debunks that double standard. Well, the reason I tell you this story is because I had the opportunity to interview Donald Trump Jr., and when I did so, I had James Edwards on as kind of a co-host guest with me as well. Because they had asked James Edwards to do the interview, and James couldn't do it, so I decided to do it, and we both did it, along with Kirk Crosby, my co-host. Anyway, long story short, the blogosphere went crazy, the mainstream press lied about us, and Donald Trump Jr. disavowed us without knowing the facts, which is the way the mainstream press usually plays the game. The reason I tell you this whole story is we just discussed last hour in detail. James Edwards filed a lawsuit against the Detroit News Incorporated. And he just wrote a press release and posted all these details to his website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, that you guys can all read and learn about. But we read that press release on the air last hour, and it's entitled A Call to Action. Please help James Edwards seek justice. Thepoliticalcesspool.org. On April 18th, 2016, our good friend and brother in liberty, James Edwards, filed a lawsuit against the Detroit News, Inc. and one of its journalists. Anyway, it goes on. But the point is, we talked about that last hour. It'll be up at libertyroundtable.com after the show, where you can download it, listen to it, etc. But if you want the documents and the press release and all the details, thepoliticalcesspool.org. The reason I bring all this up is because the Detroit News said that James Edwards was a leader of the KKK. It's an absolute blatant falsehood. My goal is not to drag you into that in any way, Patrick, but my goal is to bring it to the union discussion and the right to work discussion. It's amazing to me that their claim here is that they were involved in hyperbole. And that you know, they're allowed to say this stuff because James Edwards is kind of a political figure, and you can basically say or do anything you want against political figures, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what they're claiming is special privilege under the law to assault and violate people verbally and otherwise, slander, libel, et cetera. My whole reason to bring this up in the context for you is that's the whole claim of the unions. They have special power, special privilege to abuse and create libel and slander and all these different things against anybody. And they just come back and claim, well, by golly, we have this special right to do so. Is the comparison make sense to you?
There's no question that there are a whole host of special powers, rights, whatever you want to call it, that unions have, basically exemptions from the normal course of law, whether it's, you know, the right to violate the freedom of contract with businesses and with employees that they claim to represent but really are forcing their representation on. And it goes even to things like union violence. We'll see the Supreme Court ruled in a case in the 70s called Emmons that, in fact, unions are exempt from federal extortion and racketeering laws because if as long as what they're the extortion they're trying to do is related to their collective bargaining powers. In other words, if they're extorting a business for higher wages, let's say, or extorting a business for better benefits for the union officials in the company, that's all not covered by the federal racketeering statutes. And so there are tons of special powers, and that's sort of the way it works. They elect government officials that are friendly with them, and then they in turn receive all sorts of special powers that no other organization or individuals can have.
All right. The reason this is so critical to discuss is I appreciate that the Detroit News Service has free speech just like anybody else. They're authors, they're writers, they're journalists, they're opinion piece writers, they're whatever. The reality, though, is when you cross the line, you start to put people's lives in danger. I submit to you, by claiming James Edwards is a leader of the Ku Klux Klan when it's not the truth, it's either a fact, it's either true or not. In this case, it is not true. They claimed it was true. You get into a situation where people's lives become in danger. And I see this with regards to unions as well. You stand against a union, you deny them from stealing your money and say, I don't want to pay the fees, or I don't want to join, or I want to leave, or I want to... And instantly your life is in danger as well. There's a lot of times when people's lives become in danger based on the actions of these, quote, special privilege, pull the lever of government in their favor guys, whether it be unions, whether it be the news in this case, or whoever.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. There's no question that the certain people are held to account for what they do, and then other people get special treatment in our political system right now, and it's very unfortunate, and it's not the way that a republic with the rule of law is supposed to work.
Now, a lot of times, what people would say to me is they'd say, Sam, I don't really like the James Edwards lawsuit, or I don't really like the Right to Work Foundation because all they do is sue. And you know what, Sam? We're Christians. We're not really the suing kind. And my response to that is I agree that we're not really the suing kind. That's not necessarily our mode of operandi, if you will. However, in this case, I don't know that there's any way to stop them from their abuses. What do you say to that, Patrick?
Yeah, well, I don't, I hadn't even heard of this lawsuit until you just told me about it. But what I can tell you from our perspective on forced unionism issue, I mean, you know, people's rights are being violated. And, maybe the way the unions would handle it is send some guys out with baseball bats. As much as we'd prefer not to be the suing type, that's obviously preferable in our view. Going to the court of law to protect rights is better than sending thugs out using union tactics. And so, you know, that's why we're in court to protect people's rights. It's not something you want to do, but you also can't stand by and let people's fundamental freedoms be violated. So,
yeah, I agree with that. It's interesting to me, though, that on one hand, it's a combination between defensive and offensive. We're defensive in that we want the abuses to stop, but we're offensive in terms of increasing the protection of our rights. So, for example, right to work, we go on the offensive for that. Our goal is to grow that because it means more liberty. It means more freedom. It means more ability to act based on your own conscience. On the other hand, when the administration's in bed with government and the unions and everybody else try to abuse you, it's like, wait a minute, we're going to stop someone from being harmed. That's really the two-pronged approach, right?
I think so. I mean, if I ever felt like we were working towards, you know, special powers for right to work or something like that, as opposed to just trying to restore, you know, a system of free government and free association and free speech, then it wouldn't be something that that I'd want to be a part of, and that our supporters wouldn't want to be a part of. You know, our view is that everything we're trying to do, whether it's pass right to work laws, whether it's go into court and restore First Amendment rights, it's about restoring freedom and protecting them and from people who want to harm them and have no respect for.
Hang tight, Patrick Simmons, righttowork.org in seconds.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
All right, Patrick Simmons with us. Righttowork.org is what we're talking about. We're talking about the unions. We're talking about really groups that have special privilege to abuse the rest of us. How that happens is beyond my comprehension, but we've allowed it to occur with the media. We've allowed it to occur with unions, and it's got to stop. And to those who are Christian who don't like lawsuits, I'm with you. I agree. I'm one of them. At the same time, though, I know no better way than to take a grievance between he and thee, as the scripture is saying. If that's not resolvable, take the next step. And the next step in America, in the United States, has been if you have a problem, peacefully take it to the courts. Don't resort to your gun or something like that, or force. You know what? Go to the courts and look for a fair-minded adjudicator to remedy a redress of grievance. I mean, that's what it's all about in America. And so I think that is the proper venue for solutions. And you've actually used this kind of two-edged idea. One is to protect people, to protect a lot of people, Patrick. And secondly, then, for advocate for right to work. You've gained freedom for many people as well. That, to me, seems very Christian, sir.
Yeah, I think absolutely. You know, it's, you know, the idea of what we promote as a model of labor relations is, you know, people together, getting together voluntarily. If they want to do that through a union, that's okay. Our opposition is to the coercion, the force, the mandatory nature of so much of unionism that's not about, you know, people getting together, but is about government forcing one party to have power over the other without any just reason.
All right, there you go. What's the latest then? Let me kind of break this down. You see that Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are the two presumptives, if you will, at this point. And I don't really see anything changing there. Their commanding leads are a little bit hard to reverse and change. So unless something really crazy happens, like Hillary goes to jail over the email scandals, or Donald goes to jail over the university scandals, or something weird, there's your people. And I kind of look at it like, you know what? Hillary's the pro-union candidate, and Trump's the anti-union candidate. Maybe it's not exactly that clear, but it seems like that's what it's shaping up to be, sir.
Well, yeah, I think there's zero question that Hillary is fully on board with the union boss agenda. She wants more power for union officials, more ability of union bosses to violate the rights of rank and file workers, to violate the free enterprise system, and that's clearly her agenda. She sees that as an important place to get monetary support. I mean, union officials, union bosses have sent or spent $1.7 billion in the last election cycle, 2013-14, and we fully expect that to be even more this time. And that's on politics and lobbying. That's just from their own reports. So there's almost certainly more money out there in addition to that that will be spent. But that a lot of that money comes from forced dues. Over a billion of that $1.7 billion number is actually from general treasury money, which means people are forced to pay and will be fired if they don't pay. Many of the people contributing to that. And so this is her agenda, and she wants to expand that because she knows more forced dues means more political contributions for her and people who have a similar view of government as her. On Donald Trump's side, obviously, he doesn't have a track record as an elected official. What I can say is that he returned the National Right to Work Committee survey. They sent a candidate survey. They sent it out to all the candidates on both sides, and he returned it 100%. He said that he would sign a National Right to Work Act into law, and he said he is in favor of right to work and freedom on all the important issues that we asked him. Now, it'll be up to the people, I think, to make sure that he keeps to that promise. But certainly, that's an important step for him to publicly say, I'm in favor of this, and of course, there's a clear contrast with Hillary there.
Well, and if he directly says, "Listen, I'm going to bring jobs back. I'm going to create an environment of less regulation. I'm going to create an environment where people are going to be able to go back to work again." One of the greatest steps he could take would be the Right to Work campaign, without a doubt, sir.
Oh yeah, there's no question. If you look at the last decade, you look at basically any time period, the Right to Work states have, way outperformed, double the rate of job growth as non-right to work states. Just this past year, what was the leading state in terms of adding manufacturing jobs? The newest right to work state of Wisconsin. Michigan had a similar boom right after it passed right to work. So there's no question that right to work is a great policy. If you're making jobs your central issue, and certainly that seems to be a very important aspect of what Donald Trump is talking about, and I think what people are attracted to with him, right to work ought to be a key part of that because it has such a proven track record of job creation. And then also, it's important to point out, because you'll hear union propagandists try to claim otherwise, that when you look at states with right-to-work laws, and you look at the, once you adjust for the cost of living, the wages and the income that, that workers make is higher in right-to-work states. It just so happens that, you know, states like New York or California have such a high cost of living, but once you factor for that, you find that, that workers, not only are more jobs being created, but that those jobs are actually better for workers and their families.
And I want to make something very clear, Patrick, so people understand. We're not against unions, okay? We're not against individuals' rights to gather and say, look, employer, you're being a jerk. You're being unfair. You're being unkind. Listen, we expect you to treat us with decency and respect. We don't have a problem with that free association. Our problem is when it becomes a force scenario and the union insiders' elites tend to betray the rank and file on this altar of you'll do what I say and it becomes a force mechanism. We reject that force idea. People should be free to join and leave unions as they will. If the union is doing a good job, I might join it. If it's not, I'll leave. Okay, that free association is critical. And then this idea that the unions should not have special government privilege / access, and especially when it tends towards even allowing the unions to commit force and or violence against their members or people who don't even want to be members, at some point it becomes a free association and a right to life, liberty, and property at that point. That's kind of our differences. I've had a lot of people say, Sam, you're for right to work. That means you're anti-union. No, that's not true. I believe in a more perfect union in the United States. I'm also willingly to associate with the National Taxpayers Union. I freely join them or leave them based on my conscience and if they're doing a good job for me. And we think that's the way it ought to be for all unions. So we're not inherently against unions. And I want to correct that misnomer, Patrick.
Yeah, that's 100% right. And it's important to remember that right-to-work laws do not ban unions. They don't stop a single person from joining a union or financially supporting a union. The only change that a right-to-work law makes is that it makes membership and dues payment the choice of each individual worker instead of a mandate from a union boss on them. And so in terms of why that ends up with states that produce more jobs, you know, higher cost of living, adjusted wages, I think the answer is it changes the incentives. The union then has to work for the workers. Instead of the other way around, think about it, in a forced due state, the union will have me fired if I don't pay them. You know, the union isn't working for me. I'm working for the
union. But they might do more than have you fired, too. They might even jeopardize or threaten your life or your family.
Well, yeah, of course. If you stand up to them, then those types of things, you know, there's a long track record. And
see, it's that thuggery we stand against as well.
Thuggery as well. But certainly, I mean, but getting back to your point, right-to-work states, there are unions. It's a question of, you know, when you have more freedom of association, people can hold that union accountable, and that works out better for everyone. You know, once again, another example that...
Hold on, I want your example right after the pause. Normally, I let you go at 30, but I took some of your time on that other topic. Can you stay with me a little longer?
Sure.
Hang tight, my friend. Patrick Simmons with us, ladies and gentlemen. Righttowork.org. Do you believe in the right to work? I hope we can talk to Donald about this. I hope he does. It might be our only chance. This is Liberty Roundtable Live.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
With news this hour from LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg. Donald Trump is not the only presidential candidate facing legal controversies over a dubious university. Since 2007, the Clinton Global Initiative has operated a multi-billion dollar chain of for-profit educational institutions called Laureate Education. Trump partisan Roger Stone describes Laureate Education as a shady joint venture through which Bill Clinton has been paid $16 million to serve as chancellor. Among the rebel groups fighting against the Syrian government, the Nusra Front has distinguished itself for brutality and indiscriminate violence against civilians. This is appropriate for a group that serves as al-Qaeda's franchise in that country. Despite all of this, Nusra enjoys the material support and official protection of Washington. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov claims that the Obama administration has asked the Russian military not to target Nusra for bombing strikes. The State Department claims that it was expressing concerns about potential collateral casualties among non-combatants. Yemeni children and other non-combatants are caught in the increasingly lethal crossfire between the Iranian-backed Houthi insurgency in Yemen and a Saudi-organized coalition seeking to restore the Saudi-backed Sunni leader who was deposed in January 2015. According to a UN report, child deaths in the conflict increased sixfold last year. Both the UN and the British government have raised concerns about indiscriminate attacks on civilian populations and hospitals by the Saudi-backed coalition. For the news the networks refuse to use, turn to LibertyNewsDaily.com. For LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
All right, Patrick Simmons, righttowork.org with us, only for a couple more minutes here. Patrick, what's the big kind of key right now? On one hand, the Clinton administration is just selling us down the river behind the scenes. It's kind of the most active lame duck we've ever seen. At the same time, you got Hillary standing on one side, hopefully Trump standing on the other. Where do we see the landscape going in the next little bit here? One, before the election, between now and November. And then two, does it primarily base on the elections and what happens or what?
Well, yeah, certainly between now and November, we're going to continue to see, and we've seen a lot of this in the last couple months in particular, the Obama administration doing everything they can through the executive branch to empower their buddies, at organized labor. We've seen the National Labor Relations Board issue a number of rulings. Just last week, they issued one that basically in the 90s, a lot of history here, but I'll be brief. In the 90s, in the Clinton years, right after Clinton's election, we had a Democrat Congress. They tried to push through a bill that would prohibit striker replacements. It's kind of a complicated area of law, but basically it's very difficult if you want to continue operating your business during a union boss-ordered strike. There were these.
Yeah, I work for a company. I'm a member of a union. I refuse to work. The company decides, okay, I'm going to go get Kurt to go work because Kurt will work. They want to prohibit that, right?
They want to work, and they wanted to prohibit that. And that was rejected by Congress. But then last week, the National Labor Relations Board issued a decision that it doesn't quite enact that bill, but it gets really, really close, and it sets the standard that makes it pretty much impossible, or certainly legally, you're going to incur a ton of liability if you're a business and you try and hire replacements for a strike. It means that workers who want to work can't do it, and it means union bosses get to hold even more power over businesses and workers who object to the representation that's being forced upon them. So that's just one example of the many kind of power grabs, bureaucratic, a little bit complicated sometimes, that we're seeing between now and I think we'll continue to see by November, especially actually between now and the end of summer. At the end of summer, there's currently four members on the National Labor Relations Board. That's going to drop, and it'll have one less. And so I think we're going to see a lot of them get pushed out before that last person who's a pro-union Democrat is going to come off the board. And so that's just one example of what we're going to see. Department of Labor has been doing similar things. They're trying to, on one hand, hamper businesses. They have a law called a persuader law, basically makes it a rule that they just enacted, making it more difficult for companies to go get outside assistance. This area law is so complicated that they have to go get an attorney oftentimes to help them navigate it. Say, here's how you don't violate federal labor law, because it's so complex and complicated, and in many areas, counterintuitive. You say, what do you mean? I can't tell my employees the truth that, for example, the wages that we pay at the non-union facilities are higher than the wages that we pay at this facility that has a union. Sometimes you can't tell them that because even though it's true, the National Labor Relations Board will say that's a threat. You're bribing them to kick the union out. And so people have to go get lawyers, and the Department of Labor has just made that more difficult with a persuader rule, they call it, that makes it tough for businesses to talk to their employees without, violating the law, which, of course, is what unions want, because then they get to bring the NLRB in.
What about if you just fire the employee, tell them that, and then rehire them?
Yeah, well, then that would probably be against the law, too, under this NLRB. I mean, they're just, it's so many ways that, they just try and, squeeze any opposition to unionism. And that includes workers who are trying to get out of a union. Of course, this National Labor Relations Board is very much in favor of card check. Card check, if we remember, is the system where instead of a secret ballot election, the union goes around door to door often, shows up at people's homes, sometimes three or four union organizers on the front porch say, hey, sign this card. Sometimes they'll say, it's just, for more information or to say you're interested. And then suddenly they use that to get into the facility once they have a majority of those cards signed. People don't necessarily know what they signed. Oftentimes they're signing it because of pressure, intimidation, fear that something worse is going to happen. But they get in that way, and this NLRB is very much in favor of that system and has promoted rules to make it easier for unions to do that. But when employees try to get rid of a union through the same way, where they say, hey, we want to get a petition with a majority, there are rules saying they can't have the company's assistance in getting that. But once they get it, the company can say, okay, we're looking at this. It looks like there's no longer majority support for this union. Union, take a hike. This National Labor Relations Board and the General Counsel, who decides which cases basically to prosecute or not prosecute, has said, we're not going to allow that anymore. Anytime a company does that, we're going to take them to court, force the union back in, and then punish them. And so, there's so many different ways that the rules are being shifted and put in the advantage of union bosses and forced unionism powers and against the individual rights of workers and also to businesses who just want to, operate at a profit and pay employees fairly.
At this point, we hope for a fair administration, and we hope to get good people on the courts that'll see the truth for what it is. Have you guys been able to sit down and talk to Donald Trump?
I haven't. I don't know. I don't know if anyone here has. I mean, obviously, we got him the survey, and many elected officials don't necessarily return that right away. I think there were some connections made, kind of to say, hey, we'd really like to see where he stands on this. If he'll sign it 100%, this ought to be a good thing for him. Right to work is popular. Every time there's a national poll on the issue, 70-80% of Americans are in favor of right to work. This is good politics. This is good policy. This is about freedom. This is about putting people back to work. Those messages were sent, I don't know that anyone from National Right to Work has gotten in a room with him. I mean, we were certainly
because Rand Paul's a big right to work guy, and Rand Paul should be able to sit down with Donald fairly easily.
That's true, and you know, I don't, I can't speak for Rand, but certainly, you know, he is the lead sponsor of the National Right to Work Act, and like I said in that survey, Donald Trump says he would push for and sign the, that into law.
And he did sign. He did put that out then.
I'd love to. I think that would be fantastic to see sometime in the first year. You know, Donald Trump as president signing Rand Paul's National Right to Work Act into law. I could think of a few things that would be better for a start for an administration. So I think that would be that would be the great a great hope for us, certainly.
All right, my friend. Godspeed. We sure appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you, Patrick. We'll have you back, sir.
Excellent. Thank you, Sam.
Righttowork.org. He does a great job. It's worth worth focusing on, to say the least, ladies and gentlemen. Look, we're not anti-unions. Right to Work doesn't push out unions. What Right to Work does is fairly let people free associate and not be penalized or under threat for their associations, not only with their own lives and their interactions, but with their dollars and what they want to fund, etc. Kirk Cosby's with me. It's a brave new transgender world, my friend. You're in it, like it or not.
Oh, boy, Sam. Yeah, that's right. The story comes to us from Liberty News Daily. Yep, that's right. You know, Sam, I mean, I'm trying to remember. I believe when I was in high school, there was, you know, just kind of gradually moving towards this whole thing of the girls having their own teams and all that kind of stuff. Before, you know, that the girls basically did, you know, in sports, basically they did the, you know, cheerleader stuff, the drill team, you know, that kind of thing. But then we gradually needed to make sure that, hey, they had their own teams, you know, their own, I don't remember football teams, and I still don't see that, but they typically have their own basketball teams. They've got their own, you know, softball team, or whatever, in schools. Well, now, well, we got this brave new world, as you mentioned. The story goes that Alaska high school senior, the individual, and I use that specifically, kind of a long name, qualified for the 100-meter and 200-meter girls' track and field state championships. The individual is a biological male who identifies as a girl, and the girls say it wasn't really fair that this guy was competing because he won. And, you know, the lady says, I don't think it's competitively completely 100% fair.
Hang tight. Well, details in seconds. Liberty Roundtable Live.
If you're at all like me, you have a tough time remembering appointments and events. But ladies and gentlemen, I have the answer. It's a premier service on the internet called Memo to Me. It's free. You ought to try it. Now I never miss the honey-do items from my wife or the important business meetings. They have strict privacy protection. That means they will release your email address to no one ever. You will not get spam because of Memo to Me. Unmatched dependability. Ladies and gentlemen, these folks have been around since 1998, and they are absolutely up online all the time to send you your reminders and appointments. They have rock-solid reliability. They have 5 redundant internet connections, diesel-powered generators backing up the system. I'm telling you, Memo to Me is the premier reminder service on the internet. It's free. You got to give it a try. And, oh, by the way, if you're not available at your computer to get your email reminders, they can even send a reminder to your cell phone or pager. I use MemoToMe.com daily and highly recommend it to you. MemoToMe.com. Memo to Me.
Break the bond of Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829, or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
I don't know what to say, man. The chicks aren't happy with this one, Kurt.
No, they think it's kind of unfair that they were having a track and field event in Alaska, and some boy who identifies as a woman participated in the girls' track and field state finals.
Dude, he identifies as a chick.
And, basically, cleaned up, if you will, and the girls say it's not really fair. So anyway, this is the new world we live in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. What do you think about that, though, Kurt? Why? I mean, do you think it's right that these girls should be bigots?
Oh, well, I guess that's where we go next. You know,
right? That's how they do it.
It's just
look
up is
matter.
Down, down is up,
yes.
Sideways is backwards, and anyway.
Correct, sir. Doesn't matter how logical. Doesn't matter how legitimate.
None good is called evil. Yeah. Evil is called good.
Wow. Now, what do you think though about these ladies though? That they're just not very kind. I don't know what their problem is.
Yeah, they should. They probably need to be forced to go to some class where they'll teach them to be more tolerant. Don't you think, Sam? I mean, that would probably be the next step. I mean, they certainly are showing their,
insensitivity?
They're just good point. They're just not being good little citizens, are they?
The chorus. For the Aerosmith song, Dude Looks Like a Lady. That dude looks like a lady. That dude looks like a lady.
Yeah.
That dude looks like a lady.
Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy. But that's where we are in this world, ladies and gentlemen. What are we going to do about it, though? The thing is, I believe that the controllers, Kurt, the global elites, the evil ones, want to force this on the rest of us. But I still believe that most Americans reject this, Kurt. I really do. They just don't know what to do about it. How do you fight against it? They're afraid to stand up, and it's time that we've got to stand up.
Yep. They say that Alaska, like a number of other places, has got this whole transgender equality as a hot topic of discussion, and the Alaska Schools Activities Association recently implemented a policy to allow individual school districts to decide if a transgender athlete can compete in a sport as the gender they identify with. They said, we didn't want to necessarily create a situation where we were going to bring in a committee and those types of things just because it just... not practical here. This guy who thinks he's a woman declined to comment on the story. He qualified for a state by running the 100-meter race. It tells you the times, etc. By the way, that's in the girls' times. In all, the 16 runners qualified for the state. Anyway, the bottom line is Alaska's topsy-turvy like so many of the rest of us, Sam.
I don't even know how to respond to this. Here's the problem. Back in the day, Kurt, when girls wanted to be part of things, they wanted to dress like a man, be in men's sports.
Yeah.
We used to think, you know what? It's just an undertrod woman trying to break the, shatter the glass ceiling, you know? Yep. And who are we to deny them? And, you know, it's a matter of equality. And we went on and on with those and idea where we would justify the case. Now, when the opposite's true, what do these ladies have to say for themselves? They claim it's not fair, but are they going to stand against the feminists who have allowed this to occur? See, because what's good for the goose is good for the gander, Kurt. If the women can say we're going to be on boys' swim teams and in boys' wrestling and in boys' this and that and whatever, then why can't the boy be there, especially if he identifies as a girl? You know?
Okay. Yeah, here's a couple of comments about the story. One from Leanne and one from Diane. Just show you how the, you know, the complete opposites. The one from Leanne says, if she is physically a male, then why is he being allowed to compete in a female sport? Does no one see that as an advantage? I was an Alaska State firefighter for 10 years. I had to pass all the physical agility tests that the men passed. With that said, I never kidded myself into thinking I was as physically strong as the men because I wasn't. Diane says this, on the other hand, the female hormones or male hormone suppressants that she puts in big letters, is taking eliminate that gender advantage as far as sports, and she has been beaten in races by her teammates. Plus, those hormones encourage some breast growth, eliminate a lot of the body hair, and can render a certain organ almost useless. She is male than I am, and I'm naturally born a woman. So,
okay, we're going a little crazy here. I don't know what she's thinking. All I can tell you is we've got a mixed-up world, and Joel Skousen, in his World Affairs Brief, wrote an article, Kurt, about this very topic that I think is really cogent. Let me get this title of what he wrote here, because it's an interesting phrase that I want to kind of mention on. It basically says this, a world gone crazy.
Yep.
And I don't know how to put it any better, Kurt. I just don't know how to state it any better. We've got a world gone crazy. Yep. And now we talked to you about the lawsuit that James Edwards filed against the Detroit News people. We talked to Patrick Simmons and how the unions have special favors to abuse and malign and literally harm people and commit violence and force against them. We talked about a brave new transgender world. We've got Joel Skousen talking about a world gone crazy. And now Joseph Farah writes an article entitled An Urgent Message I Never Wanted to Write, Kurt.
Yeah, that's right. And basically what he's talking about is, you know, that WorldNet Daily, like so many other businesses, are having tough times, even in the booming economy, you know. And he says he sent this letter out to 400,000 plus WorldNet Daily email subscribers. He talks about, you know, the moves that they've made over the years, that they're in the top 350 of all websites nationwide. Most of their things that they provide to people are for free. The media that typically, or the advertising, the dollars that they typically bring in, it's way down. And now they want people to put in as, you know, as little as $3 or as much as $5,000 online to support them.
They're basically saying, look, this is an emergency because we're not getting the funding we used to get.
Yeah, yeah. And then they tell you the different things they want to do. Now, you know, at least in a comment about this, World Net Daily, like others, I believe what happens is they, you know, in the good times, they make moves to spend more money and have more costs, if you will, not recognizing sometimes that those good times won't always last. And now, like they say, now in their 20th year, they reach more than 6.5 million different people every month. He says they face an existential threat. He says some of these things might sound like excuses. Others have to do with the very troubled Obama economy. But he says, I'll say this in all honesty, Barack Obama's early years were good for WorldNet Daily, even until 3 years ago. He says WorldNet Daily was an important opposition piece. People clung to it. Well, I think another thing that's going on, don't you think, Sam, is that there's more and more competition. You know, he says retail sales have been a major part of WorldNet Daily's revenue stream. We've seen them decline precipitously in recent years. He tells you, please go to the website and buy something, basically. But it's just, he says he could have sold his website with all the traffic and all that stuff and been a wealthy person, but he knew whoever bought it would, change it, and make the end of the unique news, that kind of thing. But the bottom line is WorldNet Daily's in trouble.
Amen to that. And our prayers are with them.
Yeah.
We're not happy about this. I don't think WorldNet Daily's perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I disagree with them on some things, but they provide a valuable service. But Kurt, if they want to get a hold of somebody that can help them cut some costs and they really want to be open-minded and discuss it, I'm available as a free consultant to help.
That's what going to suggest. Yeah.
Call me, Joseph. I'm always willing to help. And, there you go. I agree with the urgent message you never wanted to write, but I also agree there's ways to cut costs and reduce expenses. If you don't believe me, go check out Liberty News Daily. Now, I agree it's much tinier than WorldNet Daily, but I also agree there's some fundamental principles we put in place that could grow what we're doing and maybe decrease costs for those guys. We're always glad to help. This nation shall endure.